This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, episode number 14. Can you believe it? Being recorded on Wednesday, May the 3rd, 2006.
I'm Jackie Becerra, AP Network News. All righty, here we go. I'm here. And you're listening to AM 1340 and 1080 KSCO. Taking the gum out of my mouth, this is Misha Isaacs giving you your Central Coast weather forecast. Let's see. Today is sunny and hazy. Highs in the 60s near the ocean to lower 70s a few miles inland tonight. Low clouds in most areas with patchy fog, otherwise fair. Lows in the 40s to lower 50s. Sunday morning, low clouds in most areas with patchy fog, otherwise mostly sunny and hazy. Highs in the 60s near the ocean to mid 70s a few miles inland. Your local temperatures at 63 in Santa Cruz, 58 in Monterey, 59 in Salinas, 60 in Watsonville, and 62 in San Jose. We take you to Schnauzer Logic with Robin Goldstein, and we want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the following live program are not necessarily those of KSCO, its staff, management, or advertisers. If something is said with which you disagree, please give us a call to balance comment.
A burglar creeps into a huge, luxurious house one night. Shining his flashlight on the floor in the dark, he hears a voice saying, "Jesus is watching you." He looks around nervously, shakes his head, and keeps searching for valuables. After a moment, he hears the voice again, "Jesus is watching you." This time, he shines the light all over, and finally it rests on a parrot. He says to the parrot, "Did you say that?" The parrot says, "Yep, it was me. I'm just trying to warn you." The burglar says, "Warn me, huh? Who are you? What's your name?" "Moses," replies the bird. "Well," says the burglar, "what kind of stupid people would name a parrot Moses?" And the bird answers, "The same folks who would name their Rottweiler Jesus."
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of Easta, my friends, Son of Easta, and welcome. You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. That's right, this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, episode number 14, being recorded on Wednesday, May the 3rd, 2006. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, I'm your buddy, I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I am thrilled and delighted to welcome all of you, each and every one of you, by name, alphabetically, to this week's program. And we have a great, great program for you. We have two guests today. We're going to be speaking with Ann Zimmerman, who is a well-known, well-respected folk singer, who is actually the lovely voice that sings to our good friend Parviz every week. The plumber is the man. We'll also be talking with Jathan Nathanson, who is on the road. He has now left his environs, his home of Los Angeles, California, and he's moved on. I believe he's at an Indian casino. We'll be talking to him today from the gaming floor. We'll be having a Road Stories update from Canadian comedian Brian Cox. We'll be getting a plumbing update, maybe talk a little bit about gas, immigrants, and Stephen Colbert. Not necessarily in that order. Plus, lots more hilarity and you. So we invite you, as always, to join the program. And let me turn the attention right now to my two good friends who are in the studio. Son of Easta to Parviz Vitale.
Son of Easta, Robin.
How are you?
Very good, thank you.
You're looking good today.
Oh, thank you.
You looked happy when you walked in today.
I thought you were happy when I walked in today.
I was.
And I wasn't even with Sean, and you were happy.
I met you at the door. Sean here? Sean here?
I actually had to bend down to show that Sean was up behind me.
And Son of Easta to Sean Meehan.
Son of Easta, Robin. Son of Easta, Parviz.
Son of Easta, Sean.
I am terrific. I'm a little, I'm road weary.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, you were traveling with Jason and just made it back here?
Well, you know.
Like Charles Carroll, you could like be on the road with him, then fly back every week.
Absolutely. Wouldn't that be the life?
I don't know.
Another bald vagabond that I could be traveling with.
Are there any other kind?
What kind of van is he in? Some kind of...
He's in a 1988 yeah? VW...
Scooby-Doo van.
But it's got a name. It's got a...
It's a Vanagon.
Yeah,
I
yeah,
think,
but it's like it's outfitted with something, right? Where the top goes up a
West
little...
Westphalia.
What is that?
I don't know.
I suppose I should ask him.
Yeah, but that's... So
Do you know what Westphalia is?
No.
You just sat up in your chair. What the hell? You have a small erection. Very small. Like an
well,
inch.
It does.
Kind of
that's
some
pretty
kind of
big.
Some kind of spinal erection there is what you had.
Did he perform Westphalia upon you? Your Honor, I direct him to answer.
Oh, man. And you well?
Well, opinions vary.
Okay. But you're here for the next 2 hours.
Yeah, I don't think anything's going to happen between now and then.
All right.
Don't Sean and I look like brothers?
Yes. Yes, you do. And you look a little bit like Jason in the...
I do.
On the webpage.
A little bit like Jason.
You checked that out?
I did. That was funny.
Does that mean that I look a little like Jason, too?
Amazingly, no.
So this is a case like I can't remember the kids of the West Wing president. The president on the West Wing.
Yeah, Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen, but he's got one of the kids is a Sheen. That's Charlie Sheen, right?
Yes.
The one with the frozen face.
Yeah, the other one's an Estevez.
Estevez,
yes.
Right.
Yes, Estevez. Estevez.
Now, they look like...
He marched. Sheen didn't.
No, it's tearing families apart.
There you go. We're 7 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Lodge of the podcast. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, and Parviz Patel. You were saying,
that's quite all right. I was just saying that many people comment that they both look like their father.
Yes.
They both look like Martin Sheen, but they look nothing like each other.
I don't think they look anything like Martin Sheen.
Well, it's like when when people say that you look like your mother, and then other people say that you look like your father, but clearly your mother and your father don't look alike.
Well, they say after years of marriage, they do.
Yeah,
you know, that's what I hear.
Well, I didn't even need years of marriage to have that happen to me. All right, let's say hello to our regulars. As always, we've got Mr. Kipadada in the house. We've got Michael Zwirling in the house.
Stroke or unload.
Dick Cheney is in the house. Harry Whittington is in the house. Who else is here? I don't know. We got anybody else in the house?
Kipadada.
We got Kipadada's also in the house.
Ah, oh, that's shit. Shit.
Jake Gyllenhaal's in the house.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Sean Meehan's in the house.
Acaloids, my friend. Somebody call the fire marshal.
Oh, man. It's been a crazy, crazy week.
Oh, just in the media or in your life?
Yeah,
in the media,
both. Media is big time, big deal, crazy. We want to talk today about the Stephen Colbert thing. But it's funny, you know, I have my house cleaned every couple of weeks by a couple of young women, very, very nice, both Mexican. One of them, I think, is a legal alien, and the other one, I think, is an undocumented worker, which is the nice way of putting it. And I didn't expect to see her this week. I figured that she would be out, but she said, no, I got to make a living. Which was an interesting concept. You know, she goes, what do you mean be out? I got to make money here.
Well, it's not like these people belong to a union, you know, that's going to kick them back something
right.
Or raise wages. I mean, this is not a union action. This is just take a day off and eat it.
So we had an interesting conversation about the march and what was going on. And, you know, she asked me my opinion about whether or not the national anthem should be sung in Spanish. Or the original Portuguese, and and I told her, you know, I said, quite frankly, I don't give a crap. It doesn't mean anything. It's a symbol. The flag is a symbol. National anthem is a symbol. These things are all symbols. Somehow along the way, we've confused the symbol with the underlying meaning.
Not only have we confused the symbol, I think we've replaced the meaning with the symbol. I think, you know, you like...
Much like Folgers.
Yes. You look at George Bush, and he'll say freedom 50 times in a speech, but we get less and less freedom. But thank goodness we can use the word freedom freely. Now, you're free. You no longer have any freedom, but you can use the word in its place. Just... You got the word now.
It's the kind of irony, if you're a humorist, that Stephen Colbert was pointing out at the White House Correspondents' Press Dinner, and was not warmly received.
He bombed.
He was not warmly received. Parviz listened to it before the show.
Very funny.
I played it for you.
He was not getting laughs.
No, which made me believe was the audio on for the audience because it was so.
But
dead.
Every now and then there would be a big laugh for something that had nothing to do with anything real. Mm-hmm. Some kind of stupid.
What I thought was amusing, oftentimes when you heard the big laughs, they would be at the beginning of a joke arc that was going to go horribly wrong for them. Like, you know, we have Mayor Nagin out there, Mayor Nagin of the Chocolate City, and everybody like, oh. But when you get to the part about the Chocolate City
Washington,
with the marshmallow
D.C.
core and the thin crust of corruption or whatever, all of a sudden there's no laughing anymore. Oh, it's going to be funny. We're going to make fun of the crazy black mayor. Oh, that's going to be wonderful. Oh, we're going to make fun of Valerie Plame's husband. Oh, that's going to be funny. Oh, this went in a direction I don't care for.
Exactly. And unfortunately, on the radio, you can't see the faces of the audience, but these were very unhappy Republicans. I don't know what they were expecting.
I don't know what they were expecting.
You know, a couple of years ago, Lewis Black spoke. And while that didn't get the same kind of, you know, he bombed coverage, because I don't think he doesn't have a nightly platform. He's not on TV every night to only a million people, according to O'Reilly. Nevertheless, he had the same issue. Lewis Black is a very political comedian. He points out the hypocrisy and the insanity of both sides of the aisle, and they didn't take kindly. So I'm hearing that Jay Leno, maybe permanent guest host, first Johnny and now the Republican. But they're not the Republican press.
He is the official comedian of the man. And I just feel that everyone out there should know that and support him.
Here's what I want to do. I want to take our first break. We're going to take a quick break because we want to talk with Ann Zimmerman, who is in Salina, Kansas. And so we've got a two-hour time difference there. So in order to honor Ann's request that we catch her before the sun completely goes down, we're going to take our first break. And we're going to play a little Ann Zimmerman music today. So we've got a couple of tunes from Ann. We'll play this first one during the break. It's called Absolute Zero. We'll come back, and hopefully, with any luck, we'll be on the phone with Ann Zimmerman. How's that? I keep saying, it sounds like I'm saying Aunt Zimmerman. Like I had an Aunt Zimmerman. My Zadie. My Bubba and my Zadie Zimmerman. You have an Aunt Zimmerman?
No, I don't.
Now something's buzzing.
On my mic?
No, I think it's me. No, you're good.
I'm on eggshells.
We've got you so trained now. We've got you so trained.
His hands are on his thighs. There's absolutely no chance he's going to make contact with anything.
Welcome to the Abu Ghraib of podcasts. I'm pointing to his microphone like Lindy England. We should have a camera because it would be funny. All right, we'll take our break. Come back on the other side. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, and Sean Meehan, plus you and more. Stick around. We'll be back.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Absolute zero, colder than ice. Cold as cold as gold can be, to be precise. Ultimate coldness on the absolute scale. At this cruel point, even the molecules fail. -459.67 degree, -273.15 degree C. It's absolute zero. Zero, frozen in time. No warmth, no heartbeat, no rhythm or rhyme. No motion, no sympathy, no loving embrace. Just what I see when I look in your face. It's absolute zero. Your only deal. cold as cold as cold can be, to be precise. Ultimate coldness on the absolute scale. At this cruel point, even the best of us fail. And scientists say that they cannot quite get there, but they haven't seen you like I have when you're
fun than flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We are 17 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, Parviz Vitali. Are you excited?
I'm very excited.
Because we got this guest for you.
I know. This is, I feel like I know her.
Do you?
No, but I feel like I should know her.
All right. Well, you know, as you guys know, Parviz made a major career change a few weeks ago. Wow, it was almost a month ago now?
1 month ago.
Isn't that amazing?
It's gone fast.
Very, very quickly. And so moving from kind of groceries and what have you.
Retail.
In retail into a plumbing, commercial plumbing. Let's be clear about this. Not the other kind of plumbing. But commercial plumbing.
Commercial plumbing.
We needed a new theme song for you. And I went looking, and you would be amazed at the small number of plumbing songs out there. Not a huge genre of tunage. Nevertheless, I found this wonderful, wonderful song on iTunes by an artist named Ann Zimmerman called The Plumber Is the Man. And so I thought, well, we got to play the song. And after playing it for a couple of weeks, I thought, this is such a wonderful song. Let me see if I can find out a little bit about the artist. And I did. And I sent her an email, and she deigned to be on the program with us. And so if we push down the button right now, we should be able to talk with Ann Zimmerman. Welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. Let me embarrass you by reading your bio off of your website, if I may.
It says, it's really long. Just shorten it up. Okay?
I shall. Ann Zimmerman, Kansas singer and songwriter. She sings the prairie into universal language with harp, piano, guitar, and that wonderful voice breezing its way into your heart. Ann grew up in Salina, singing folk songs with her family to the strums of her mother's auto harp. She's been an elementary teacher, a bank clerk, a plumbing catalog editor. There you go. Little
Very
background
nice.
There. Yeah. An agricultural intern, a student, and a graduate of the Harvard Law School, president of the Kansas Environmental Organization, and a longtime legal aid lawyer. She now lives in Salina on a horse boarding farm with her husband and divides her time between legal, mediation, and music.
I have to tell you that it's in Kansas, it's Salina.
Oh, is it? My apologies.
That's all right, because in California, it's Salinas. But
yes, it is. Is there a connection between the two? Are they considered sister cities?
No, not at all. They have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, and I apologize for even making the suggestion.
No, I think we are named after the Saline River, and they didn't want to emphasize the fact that the water might be salty back then in the pioneer days, and so they called it Salina, so no one would think of saline solution or anything like that. So,
well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show and really talk to you about not only your music, which is magnificent, and the folk genre which you're singing in, but as someone who has made the jump back and forth between creative arts and the law, want to talk to you about how you made that jump to become a graduate of law school, especially Harvard Law School, but pretty much any law school. How did that trek take place?
Well, I started out my adult life as an elementary school teacher in inner city schools and had a short career. And so after that, I was flailing around to see what to do and spent time in various professions, which are mentioned in my bio, and decided I wanted to know what lawyers know, because lawyers seem to be kind of the high priest of society, and I didn't necessarily want to be a lawyer, but mm-hmm. I wanted to know what lawyers know. So I said, well, I might as well apply to the big-name places and see if you get a fabulous education there like they say you do. And I got in at Harvard and among other places, and so I went there. And during all this time, I was already singing, so that was just kind of in the background. It was never a major career at that point, but I got to law school, and I'm not sure I got a fabulous education, and I really kind of felt stupid all the time when I was there, but I did graduate, and so now I am a lawyer, so
You're a Harvard-educated lawyer.
That's right. It's what? A ticket. I have a friend who said there's two kinds of degrees. One you wear like a badge, and one you wear like a shirt, and I consider Harvard my badge, so there you go.
But clearly, music is an early love, if not your very first love. And I'm curious because I've only recently been turned on to bluegrass music. And in listening to a lot of your music today, preparing for today's show, although I guess it's categorized most easily as folk music, there are lots of elements of bluegrass in the instrumentation and the music and what have you. How did you become a folk singer? Was it sort of, did the name do anything? Being a famous Zimmerman, did that help you move into folk music?
Yeah, my cousin Bob and I, we just are like peas in a pod. No, Bob is not my cousin, and the truth is I grew up with my mom listening to folk music in the 60s, and so those are all a basic part of my understanding of the world. So in the 70s, I was listening to all the pop music that there was, and I already knew all the folk songs, and so it was only later than that that I realized there was such a thing as contemporary folk music, and the things that I was already singing just in my spare time in my back room with the piano, they fit right in there. So that's where I ended up as a folk musician.
And what is the health of sort of the folk music scene today? I mean, we see resurgences sort of every so many years of every different kind of genre. Is folk going through another resurgence? Has it never really left?
Never really left. And it's very healthy in little spots, especially little spots on the internet, little spots of festivals around the country. One that I go to often, well, just about annually, is at Kerrville, Texas. And it's an 18-day festival of folk music and songwriters. And it's a whole world unto itself. I don't go for all 18 days, but some people do. And you get the sense of all the folk music there is around and where you can find it. And there are enclaves in Boston and a lot of people in California.
Sure.
I don't know if there are any groups of them, but anyway, there are a lot of them that are out there somewhere. And in Kansas, I wouldn't say there's a folk scene. There's a big bluegrass festival that's here every year, but I sing very odd gigs. I'd sing at annual meetings of organizations and farmers co-op annual meetings, and I don't know, the other day I sang for the Kansas Association of Therapeutic Massage and Body Works. And so I didn't sing the plumber song that day. I usually sing the plumber song almost everywhere I go because it's a great fun one to sing. And of course I didn't write that one. That's one that I learned from Garrison Keillor on A Prairie Home Companion. And I had, I grew up in a plumbing family. My dad and my brother run a wholesale plumbing, heating, and air conditioning supply. And so I grew up running around in the showroom, jumping into the bathtubs and sitting on the toilets and running around in the lot where there were septic system tanks and pipes and things like that, So that when I heard that song, I just knew I had to learn it, and it's quite a crowd pleaser.
And you've made it your own, I think. I don't think I could determine. I couldn't listen to that song with anyone else singing it at this point. We're talking with Ann Zimmerman, by the way, for folks who may be just tuning in right now, who is a singer and among many other things. And she has a website which you can go to. It is www.annzimmerman.com, Zimmerman. And she is in Salina, Kansas. How'd I do?
I think you did it right, but there's no S at the end. So it's Salina.
I didn't.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, I did. I have a speech impediment.
Salina is right then.
Ding 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 ding.
You know, it just shocks me that somewhere in the 19th century there was a great deal of concern that people in the general public would be turned off by the connection between Salina and salinity. Because I'm sure that was not a term that was just bandied about by, you know, in some geological engineering circles. I'm sure there's a great deal of talk of salinity, but for most part, well, I ain't going there because that just, there's no homestead in there. Look at it, it's a problem
water
with salinity.
Water might be bad.
Yeah, you know, no.
Well, water was extremely important back then.
It
so.
Was, and maybe they were hip to those water terms, those technical water terms. It just surprised me, struck me as odd. That's all.
Well, and one thing I want to say about the plumber song that I added in there myself was the plumber talk, which comes between the third and fourth verse.
Yes.
I called up my brother before I recorded the song, and I said, what do plumbers say to each other that not everybody else would say or say to their customers? And he told me a few things, and then I called my brother-in-law, who is a master plumber elsewhere in Kansas. He's in Dodge City, Kansas. And he's a master plumber, and I asked him what plumbers say that other people might not say, and I wrote them all down, and I got some guys I know to record them and put them there in between those verses.
Well, so, you've got that Greek chorus of plumbers in the background there.
Yes.
Were they studio musicians, or did you actually pull in some real plumbers for authenticity?
There was no plumber in the group, but there was a plumbing wholesaler who is my dad. And
okay.
That prevented it from being a union
like
violation.
I see.
Like, this place smells awful. That's one of his main lines there in the song. Well, so he was a native plumber speaker, but none of the rest of them were.
So they all had to do it grammatically. No, what when you just kind of mouth out the language from another, like when you
phonetically?
Learn, phonetically, that's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Yes, thank you. Words are not. I did not go to Harvard Law School. I went to Albany Law School, so I could just, they let me stand at the gate in Harvard Square, and I could buy magazines at Nini's Corner, and then I had to leave. That was all I could do.
That's pretty close.
Yeah, I know. Did you enjoy your time in Cambridge? Because it seems like you've spent your entire life, I mean, quite literally in the heartland of America. I didn't do the triangulation today, but it looks like Salina, no S, is almost dead center geographically in the United States, or fairly close to it.
Yes, I think it's about an hour and a half from Lebanon, Kansas, which is the geographic center of the United States.
So if you drop a marble anywhere in this country,
it'll wind up in Lebanon.
Eventually.
something like that, yeah.
We're going to start
but
proving
it's
that.
It's true that Cambridge and Harvard are not like Kansas at all, which is why I felt so out of place the entire time. But I did my homework, and I got it. I graduated. So there you go. Now I'm back in Kansas. I'm an oddity here.
Is it a red state, blue state kind of thing? I mean, that's the terms today, obviously. But did you feel there was a cultural kind of difference? Were there true differences in values that you were experiencing?
It wasn't the red state, blue state thing, because I guess I have to say that I am a blue person in a red state. So I've always had that sense of being weird here politically compared to the norm in Kansas.
We're all purple underneath.
Extremely red state.
Right.
But no, I think some of it was cultural in the sense of how you hold your head and how you inflect your words. It's hard to explain, but I had a roommate who he wasn't a law student, but he was right around there in Massachusetts, and he would talk to you. He was a perfectly nice guy. And I guess, five of us living in this house. And as he would talk to you, he'd lift his chin just slowly until he was sort of looking down his nose at you. And my inclination was to punch him out because he was acting like he was better than me, which is what it would be in Kansas if someone lifted their chin that way. Which, so it's very tiny little things that all the time made me feel everyone was, I don't know, looking down at me or something.
You don't know how many times that happened to Bobby.
I should have been able to cope with these things.
But you don't think it was some kind of inner ear infection he was suffering from? Some kind of chronic labyrinthitis, which was...
But he did it for 2 years, so it was a long-lasting infection.
Antibiotics won't help. That's what the docs will tell you. I want to talk just for another second about the folk music itself, because as you say, you come from this history and you listen to folk songs growing up with your mom. And folk songs during the 60s and early 70s had a protest element to them. They came sort of from the Pete Seeger generation and then moved forward. in many ways. At least the best ones did, or the politically active ones did. I don't see that same kind of folk song movement, the protest movement, today. Although I guess Neil Young has just recorded or is in the process of recording and releasing an album which is effectively all protest songs. But you don't seem to see the same kind of political involvement. Is that just because people aren't getting to hear it on the radio? It's happening, but it's just not getting airplay, or people
yes,
just not.
I would say that's exactly right. They don't play the airways are so tightly controlled today that nothing very far out of the mainstream would ever get played. And there is lots and lots of political music out there that would never make it onto the major radio stations, and it's all over the place. If you're looking on the internet or on some public radio programs. Now, in Kansas, it wouldn't come up very much anyway because it's not that critical mass of people having that political point of view. I guess as far as left wing goes, we have quite a right wing views. People of right-wing views around here that are making their name in politics and anti-evolutionists and
that certainly sends
like that
waves out through the country. We definitely hear about that, but it's interesting musically that there is some crossover mainstream protest song action. I noticed the artist Pink, who is famous more for sort of party music and but kind of a pop icon. She just came out with a scathing protest song that's getting top 40 airplay.
And I think I read about it, but I haven't heard it. I don't think I listened to the right stations.
Sort of Mr. President, Would You Walk With Me or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's really quite damning. And obviously Neil Young. I think you expect things like that from certain artists like Neil Young.
Right.
But
The old guys.
But I think it's interesting. Madonna, the other day in a live show, made some remark about George Bush can, you know, you can go suck his dick or something. She said something, you know, of that
vulgar.
That sort of vulgarity.
Madonna
in a live. Yeah, in a
I don't
live.
Believe it.
It is hard to believe.
Made a big stir back when the war started.
That's right.
And then we're shut up quickly.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were shut down is probably more accurate. Yeah, exactly.
That didn't go over with the NASCAR crew.
Do you worry about that in your own performances? You have three albums out, by the way, or three CDs, I guess, and three tapes that are available on your website, and only two of which are available on iTunes. Why can't we get the third one, Ann Zimmerman?
Well, I think it's because I never got around to it on the first one. That's the oldest one that's not available. So I probably ought to just get around to it and put it on there somewhere, but I haven't yet.
Okay.
And as for the politicalness of my songs, I do sort of worry that I water down my views to some extent because of the places I play. But I feel like more of what I do in my gigs, which are almost all in Kansas, there's some I go around the country a little bit, but most of my gigs are in this region. More of what I do is to give a voice to the rural kind of heartland lives that people live here. Almost nothing we do around here would ever make it onto a Nashville station or a Los Angeles music genre, and we certainly don't fit in the New York City scene. And so I sing songs of rural life and people and things that are around here. One of my songs I wrote on my recent album, Blue Wild Indigo, the title song, is sort of a look at the world through the images of a prairie wildflower, and which sort of, I kind of turns my stomach to say it that way. It sounds like too gooey, but it's not political at all. It's more a love song, but it's all these images that are around here that aren't other places. And so that's more of what I do, is I give people a voice out here in the heartland, regardless of their political leanings. I know a lot of other songs that I do when the gig is right. I did a gig recently for an organization that's spent a lot of energy lobbying against the Defense of Marriage Act, which, you know, outlawed gay unions and marriages and stuff like that. I was the group was supporting gay marriages and unions and civil unions and all that, and so I was singing for their annual meeting, and so I pulled out all the songs that fit that subject and the leanings of the people I was singing for, because it's easy for me to sing them. I love them. I just don't sing them very often.
I actually heard
that. For farm groups, I sing songs about rural life and farmers and wind and weather and things like that. That's how I justify the fact that I don't sing political songs very much.
Well, no, I mean, you're obviously an entertainer. And so what you're trying to do is entertain your audience. You're not trying to bludgeon them into a particular point of view.
You're no Stephen Colbert.
I didn't hear that. What is that? I'm sorry. I missed your line.
You're no Stephen Colbert.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my gosh. I just saw a clip from his roasting of the president, just the introductory 5 seconds of it or something yesterday. So that was... Yeah, that was very rude.
He experienced absolute zero. It's kind of appropriate that you played that song today.
That's right. But my Midwestern sensibilities prevent me from speaking that way in front of actual people.
But your town is fairly small. 25,000 people, is that right? Something like that?
Well, 45.
45,000. And yet you've come back there, understanding that you may be somewhat of an outsider. How do you put those two pieces together? On the one hand, you may feel like you don't fit in politically with the general population, and on the other hand, obviously, it feels like home to you.
Yeah, and there are little enclaves of people that with whom I identify politically very well, and so you just have to seek them out and eat dinner with them and go to the things they go to and. To make yourself feel like you're not all alone.
You think that's what people do all across the country? You think this is a fairly common kind of experience for people?
I do. And the longer you stay in a place, the more you get the respect of your peers who, even if they disagree with your politics, they have to give you credit for being a decent person. And it takes a while to establish yourself as being a decent person. And so if you're moving around all the time, you can find little enclaves wherever you go, but you don't get the credibility built up with anyone that actually disagrees with you. They can write you off as a wacko or something that they would never want to have their children around.
Democrat.
Yeah. Ooh.
Here you go. But me, I teach Sunday school, and I.
So you're one of the good Democrats who's on the road to becoming a Republican. do you listen to anyone
and
in the mainstream?
I think at the farmer's market and things like that. So anyway, it's all right. I just feel at home here, like you say. And my parents are here, and they're getting older, and my brother and his little toddler kids are adorable, and they're around here, so that's really fun.
Do you listen to anyone in the mainstream right now? Any artists that get airplay coast to coast, or do you listen primarily to genre music, to folk music, or bluegrass, like the festival that comes to your town?
Yeah, I'm not too big on bluegrass myself, but I do listen to the radio, and I don't have satellite radio in my car, and I listen to the country stations sometimes, and I listen to the pop stations. I guess I don't listen to rap and hip-hop. I really love melodies, and they don't really have melodies in those songs, but I tend to like certain songs, and I don't always figure out who's singing them. I had to do a workshop on music writing recently for some teachers, and I was listening to one song that I really liked because it had a little theme. I was bringing it up at this workshop because it had a little musical theme that ran all the way through it, and so I had to figure out who sang it so I could tell them and play it for them, and it was 100 Years by Five for Fighting. Now, I had no idea that I might like Five for Fighting until I looked up their name, but I do like that song, and so there are just songs that come on, and I think, oh, yeah, I really like that song, and so I look forward to hearing them, and there are a lot in between that I don't like, but that's the way it goes. So I listen to the radio, and what's on, I pick and choose which ones I like and which I don't. So there you go.
We are talking with Ann Zimmerman, who is a singer, songwriter, celebrity in her in her neck of the woods. What is
an oxymoron? The famous folk musician.
Famous folk musician. Well, you're certainly in good company. What is next for you? Another album that's coming out soon? The last one was a few years ago, I guess.
Yeah, the last one was 2 years ago, and there were about 5 years between the other two that I did. So I think it'll be a little while longer before I do another one. I don't write songs very fast and very often, and just at this point, I have parents that are developing late in life problems I'm taking care of, and my husband is a horseman and we run a horse boarding stable.
So you're busy, in other words. The dance card's full. The itinerary's all topped up.
Yeah, I don't have very much time to do anything. So, and then I have my mediation and my law, so I don't know what's next. I'm just making it from day to day at this point.
Well, I hope that you'll continue to sing.
Well, I will.
You have an absolutely magnificent voice. I'm sure you've heard this before and you know that, but it is just...
Well, thank you.
We were all struck by it, truly.
Yeah. Yes, truly. But
Parviz, I'm glad to have filled the genre of the plumbing song.
Parviz has been silent almost the entire time. Do you have anything you want to say as we say goodbye to Ann?
And you do... you understand why our connection with you, right? Because of the plumber songs. Rob must have told you I'm a commercial plumber. And
yes.
So we heard the song. And I just wanted to say that you and I already have so much in common. We already have so much in common. I'm a commercial plumber, and your family was in the plumbing business. You're a singer.
Right?
You're a singer. I'm a singer as well to my own classic rock band. And I don't live in Kansas.
And thank you so very much for letting us intrude on a weekday evening and being part of the program. And
thank you very much. Sign
up for your newsletter, and hopefully there'll be some more songs coming out, as soon as you can.
Okay, and I'll try to get my third album on the iPod.
There you go, on iTunes. Ann Zimmerman, thank you so very much. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.
That was pretty nice.
She's way too nice.
Yeah? Too nice to be on this show?
Yeah, really. She's too nice to be on this show.
Oh, my
show.
God. I just wanted to tear into her.
No, you didn't.
No, not tear into her, but I wanted to ask her, like, did any Mexicans walk off during the recordings or anything?
Maybe it's good that you just kind of sat there. All right, we're going to take a break here. We'll come back on the other side. I think we'll be talking to Jason Nathanson. So
you can rip on him. You can get all up in his business.
All right, here you go. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Stick around. To stumble onto you and find my finest dream come true.
For more Schnauzer Logic.
If all you need is love, then what is up with always wanting something? If all you need is love, then what is up? We'll be right back.
We feel that in every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Crystal!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We are 49 minutes into this hour of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, buddy, and pal. Also, straight white Buddhist vegetarian, lesbian, fraternity boy, trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman, patent attorney, the justice bureau, and master gain city planning. www.schnauzerlogic.com. That is the website. Robin@schnauzerlogic.com. That is the email address. We have another friend added to our MySpace account, by the way. So it's myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. And for those of you who may be listening to this podcast right after it goes up, which will probably be on Wednesday night or early Thursday morning, we're having some problems with the site that hosts the webpage for the blog. So our good friend John DeCoven of Win John DeCoven's Money sent me an email today telling me that the images and the links were not showing up, just the text. And we've sent a note off to the folks at T-Blog. They understand this, and they're going to see what they can do about getting this fixed as quickly as possible. So robin@schnauzerlogic.com, that's an easy way to get me email, or you can just leave a comment on the webpage. And let us say, Son of Easton, welcome back to Sean Meehan.
Son of Easton, my friends.
Ooh, Parvis Vitali.
Son of Easton, Robin. Son of Easton, Sean.
Son of Easton.
Son of Easton, Ann Zimmerman.
I didn't say Son of Easter, and I did not play this particular bumper on the way back.
Yes,
this
that's
one
great.
Time at folk music camp.
And it's way too classy for this show.
I think it is very interesting that, you know, someone who clearly is, you don't just apply to Harvard Law School and get in. You know, despite what was that music, the you know what I'm talking about,
Blonde. Blonde.
Legally Blonde. Yeah. Thank you. Right. Not Pretty in Pink. Despite what Legally Blonde might have suggested, you don't simply apply to Harvard Law School and go in there. I mean, I couldn't get in. And so she's clearly smart, you know, book smart, intelligent kind of smart, politically interested, talented in a lot of different ways, to leave and then to come back to the same place because you want to work with those people, live with those people, educate those people. That's what makes this country a great place. Not waving the flag. It isn't all the bullshit that the president and the Republicans and Fox News and these talking heads. It's people who want to be with other people, help other people, educate other people, take care of other people. I think that's what it is, my friend.
Parvis, could you hold my place here while I go turn Robin in?
Thank God you said place.
Right with
I didn't know where he was going with that.
God bless us. All right.
That was beautiful. It was stirring.
I thought you said we're not supposed to sing anymore.
I was not singing, my friend. All right, listen, we're keeping our good friend on the line here. Let's say so. Oh, no, we can't say Son of Vista because he's got music. Hold on a second. I almost fucked this up here. Hold on. We got music.
Yeah. Well, he sneaks around the world from Kiev to Carolina. Sticky-fingered filcher from Berlin down to Belize. Take you for a ride on a slow boat to China. Tell me, where in the world is the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van? Yeah, he flies around the globe, mega flim-flam every nation. He's a double-dealing diva with a taste for thievery. Itineraries loaded up with moving violations. Tell me, where
the
bald Jewish guy in the
1988
VW van.
Tell me.
Where in the
there you go. Jason Nathanson, Son of Easton, my friend. Welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Son of Easton, Robin and company.
How are ya?
Good. How are you?
Jeez, you're always so fucking loud. I don't understand it.
He wants to be
and
heard.
And the music was really soft, too. I don't get it.
Well, not over the air. So where in the world is Jason Nathanson?
I am in Jackson, California, at the Jackson Rancheria Indian Resort and Casino.
Wow. All the splendor of Jackson. Incredible.
Yeah.
Now, I thought, based on the itinerary you gave us last week, your goal was to go from North Hollywood, and I believe you were going to be in Ventura. by now.
Trader Joe's.
Yeah. did you make it to, there was a wedding or something, or a bachelor party or something?
There's
like that?
There's a bachelor party in Vegas on the 18th.
Ah, so that still lies ahead.
Yeah. How many times am I going to have to explain this?
Many. Many, 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 because we have lots of shows and lots of time.
Hey, Jason, did you get laid at all in this last week?
No, I haven't. It's been 3 days.
That was part of Visa asking. It's been 3 days since you've been laid?
It's been 3 days since I've started the trip.
Oh. I was going to say, damn, is there room in that Westphalia for me? I'm coming down.
The right answer would have been yes. How would we know? So how's the van holding up there?
The van is holding up just fine. No problems so far. I traveled up to San Francisco, made it to San Francisco by Tuesday, and I was carrying about 400 or so pounds of extra weight, transferring furniture for a friend from Los Angeles to San Francisco. No problems with the van yet.
Now, do you just have people you know taking advantage of the fact that you're on the road now? Basically, you're like a free courier.
And it wasn't even like a cool piece of furniture. It was a baby changing table. So you want to ask why I didn't get laid? I had a baby table in my van.
I was going to ask you what defines a cool piece of furniture, but I'm pretty sure that a baby changing table is the opposite. So I withdraw the question, Your Honor. So how many miles do you think that is? About 500 miles?
As of yesterday's tally, I was at 429. To come to Jackson was probably another 140 or so, something like that.
All right. So
I'm almost to 600.
Almost 600 miles.
Almost 600 miles.
Wow. You realize back in the days of the 49ers, I don't mean the San Francisco 49ers, the gold miners, it would have taken them, how long would it take them to go 600 miles?
About 14 years.
About 14 years.
Give or take a year.
Yeah. So it's remarkable what technology, how much technology has advanced just in the last 50 years.
And I wouldn't be able to talk to you on a podcast back then.
No, you'd have to do it on just a regular streaming radio show.
Or by smoke signal, and since I'm at an Indian casino, that would be appropriate.
So you stayed the first night at a gas station.
Yes, I did. Let's blame the GPS for this one, because I was driving up and I was getting tired, and I put in the GPS. It tells you where campgrounds are. So it tells me there's a KOA campground, which I have a KOA card for and everything. I'm all prepared for this. And I put in the GPS, and it takes 12 miles. So I go 12 miles and I show up at an empty field. And I look around and I start driving around the field basically for a couple square miles to find absolutely nothing. No campground, no KOA, no KKK. There's nothing K there at all.
Gotcha.
And so I keep going a little more.
This is an empty field, by the way.
What was that?
This is an empty field.
Yeah.
But you still felt the need to actually drive around.
There could have been little people.
It was dark. I wasn't sure if I was missing a sign or something.
Of course. Sorry,
so
M. Night Shyamalan. Keep going.
Now I'm looking for some place to sleep, and I see, you know, at different places, trucks pulled off on the side of the road, and I figure wherever I see trucks pulled off, it's probably safe to sleep around there. So I see an Exxon or a Chevron station, go in, start talking to the owner, the guy who works there. It was 12:30 at night. He was Mexican. It was officially the day after the protest, so he was allowed to be at work.
You caught a break?
At that point. he says, you know, go ahead, just sleep in the back. I got a big parking lot. So I pulled in there, 1 o'clock in the morning, popped up my little pop-top tent, and slept there for about 5 hours.
Did you hang out the sign, if the vans are rocking, don't come knocking?
You know it, baby. if the baby changing table is rocking, don't come knocking.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, a man alone in a van driving the back roads with a baby changing table, no baby.
I gotta admit, a little suspect.
Yeah, it seems to say, hey, little girl, I have a hurt puppy in the back of my van. It doesn't say good things. It worries me.
I wonder if the gasoline attendant guy was planning on raping you, and when he looked through the window and saw the baby changing table, he just walked away.
He got scared. Yeah, he got scared. He thought I was going to rape him on the changing table.
This guy's out of my league.
Yeah, there's a whole nother level of kink.
Is that what you were thinking?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
That's a possibility.
He's like, park in the back of the gas station. And I'll be there in 2 hours
I'll
when I'm off.
To rape you. Oh, he has a baby changing table.
Well,
Not tonight, Juan.
We all saw there's something about Mary. We know what goes on at these rest stops.
They could have been tuckered out from walking the day before.
But do you feel like you're on the road yet or not quite?
Not quite yet, because I'm still in California. Tomorrow, I'll probably get right to the border of California and Oregon. And once I cross into Oregon, I'll feel a little more like I'm on the road. Today was a little more new, because I haven't been to this area yet. I'm staying in Pioneer, where my aunt and uncle live. So this is all kind of new. So I feel a little more exploratory.
Now, they let you stay there, though. They don't make you park in the back of a gas station. They let you at least use the facilities, right?
Well, that's yet to be seen. We haven't worked out any kind of arrangement yet. So
well, take out the piercings.
I might be in the driveway. Who knows?
Now, you've got a blog, which is people can read over at randomshow.blogspot.com, and you're posting way too many fucking pictures. Dude, it's so gay. It's very girly. It's like, and this is my thing, and this is my friend, and did you bring some kind of weird thing that you can take a picture of you with everywhere? Because there's pictures of all we're getting to basically see is your head and your arm extended just out of the reach of the frame.
I have a very special thing. It's called my arm, and I hold it out and take a picture of
you. Didn't
head.
Bring like a lawn gnome or a no, joint or something?
Well, you're going to be carrying furniture anyways. You could do one of those red couch things. One of those.
That, see, if you took the baby changing table out and then put that in front of all the famous monuments, now you would have a coffee table book. That's all I'm saying.
That's a good idea. I'll have to pitch that to some publisher.
You need to steal something from your aunt and uncle's place. Their teeth, something, and it could be dentures across America. We could all.
I figure I'm going to put the pictures up there, and if you don't want to look at them, you know, you can just go through them really, really quickly. You don't have to actually spend a lot of time looking at the pictures. But for people like my parents and friends and stuff, the pictures are interesting.
Pepsodent could pay for your trip, though.
Absolutely.
You could get a corporate sponsor if you got a set of choppers.
It's a denture mobile.
Yeah. You could.
Yeah, I'm going to get a lot of sex with that one. A lot of gummers.
Well, I was going to say, maybe not from all the people you want, but it could happen.
If you can't be with the one you love,
absolutely.
Be with the gummer.
You got to pay a little extra. What? Huh? What'd you say, Parvati?
Be with the gummer. Take your teeth out.
Now, we got one comment for you on the Schnauzer Logic webpage, www.schnauzerlogic.com. Somebody suggested that you visit Wallingford, Connecticut. Do you know somebody in Wallingford, Connecticut?
Wallingford, Connecticut.
Wallingford, Connecticut.
What the hell's in Wallingford, Connecticut?
The gas attendant's family.
I have no idea.
Is it baby changing table convention? I mean,
well, I think that's something.
Did they have a suggestion of what to visit there, or just the city itself?
He gave an address. Come visit him.
He did not give an address, and there's no name, so that's why I'm wondering whether you might have Mishpucha, the Ganze Mishpucha.
Do we know it's a he?
No, we don't know it's a he. It could very well be a woman. Or me.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is you've got your wireless laptop, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you need to do a little research. You need to figure out what's going on in this little sleepy Connecticut burg and wake him up. Perhaps it has like the world's largest ball of twine or something that you have to see.
Well, here's something that
I don't think that's in the list of have to see.
Well, I got a listing of the things the exact things that Sean is mentioning. Okay.
Okay.
Are you planning on going to Louisville, Kentucky?
Actually, I might go to Louisville, Kentucky. The host of the radio show that I used to produce on KFI, his last gig was in Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
And he's a huge celebrity there. I could probably go there and get treated like a king.
All right. What we're going to do is we're just going to actually cut it off after you say yes, and then we'll just add it to here so that you'll go yes, and then I'll continue with the conversation. So
he's as abusive
Don't
with
worry.
Us. Don't feel bad.
Don't worry,
I didn't realize you didn't want me to talk.
No, okay. No. I do. I always want you to be interesting. Okay. So... one. So if you go to Louisville, Kentucky, you can see the world's largest baseball bat. It's 120 feet high and 68,000 pounds.
See, we could have cut you off after World War II.
Oh, man.
Just following your rules.
Now, what did Kipadada think about that?
Oh, that's shit. Shit.
Okay. if you go to George Washington, you can see the world's largest cherry pie. Are you going to George Washington?
To see the world's largest cherry pie, now I am, I guess.
All right, Marietta,
Is that like the warrant video?
It's got 400 pounds. It's got 400 pounds of cherries, and they bake it every 4th of July.
Oh, sweet cherry pie.
You planning on going to Marietta, Georgia?
Okay.
Marietta, Georgia, the world's tallest chicken, 55 feet high, without giblets.
It's not an actual chicken, I assume, though.
They're doing strange things.
It's right next to the Marietta nuclear plant.
Exactly. That's just downwind of Three Mile Island, my friend.
Are you driving through Wilmont, Ohio?
Maybe I am.
World's largest cuckoo clock, my friend. 23.5 feet high. Okay.
Not anymore.
Lexington, Kentucky?
Possibly.
World's biggest Dixie cup. 9 feet high with a 1,300-gallon capacity.
That's the best they could do.
I'm glad you completed that with E-cup, because I didn't want to see what was going to come before that.
Beaumont, Texas?
Okay.
World's biggest fire hydrant. Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Wait, is the world's biggest dog next to the world's biggest fire hydrant?
It may be. Santa Fe, New Mexico, the world's biggest harp. Playable. Paran playable. None of these fake, big, unplayable harps. That's only 13 feet. The biggest ketchup bottle is in Collinsville, Illinois. The biggest office chair is in Anniston, Alabama.
That's actually needed by an Alabama resident. So sometimes it's occupied. You can't always get in.
Alabama down.
There's a big fat guy doing his job in it.
Ooh. You got to go to Blackfoot, Idaho. Biggest potato chip, my friend. 25 inches by 14 inches.
I wonder if there's a little image of Christ on there.
They're the world's biggest Christ in a potato chip. On a stick. Up your ass on a shingle. With
deep battered and dipped in glass.
I have a feeling Ann Zimmerman just turned off her podcast.
And finally, you're not going to go through Baker, California. Are you coming back that way?
It depends on what there is there.
World's biggest anal thermometer. Actually, it's just thermometer. I put an anal in just to make it funny. Actually, if you put anal in front of any of these, it makes it funny.
How appropriate. He has a baby changing table.
Biggest anal baseball bat. Biggest anal chicken. See, I'm telling you, my friend. The biggest anal harp playable. So you're not just going to be driving around visiting elderly residents or playing. You were in a casino today.
I'm 3 for 3 so far. Each day I've been at a casino.
So your trip's going to be over in like another 14 hours. How are you doing, by the way?
At the rate I'm going, it's going to be over very soon.
You're a poker man, is that right?
Yeah, I've been playing some poker and not very well.
Why is that? You nervous? You all excited about being on the road? Is it kind of forced your concentration out?
Yeah, actually I'm more concerned about my car being in the parking lot locked with all my stuff in it. So that's kind of weighing on my mind. So I'm sitting there playing the cards, and I'm just thinking about the scary people in the parking lot looking at my car and stealing my laptop.
Well, how the fuck are you going to get over that, dude?
I don't know.
This is going to be like
something I'm going to.
Be a 6,000 mile race for home. You're more Jewish than I am. Jesus Christ. That's
maybe I should just sit in the van and play online poker on the laptop.
Did you remember to turn off the gas before you left home?
There's a propane tank in the car. Maybe that's affecting me.
All right, so tomorrow you head off to a Pioneer.
Pioneer's right near Jackson.
All right.
In kind of eastern northern California.
Okay.
We're about 90 miles south of Tahoe.
Okay.
And then I go to the border where my parents in the 70s bought 2 acres of land in case there was Armageddon or something. They had a plot of land that
they
could go to.
Is that right?
I'm going to go check that out. And then
they gave you a list. They gave them a list of chores.
Make sure the dry goods are still there.
Oh, I spent my summer vacation doing cross-country chores.
Can you take a piece of furniture up for us and then go check out this land over
Where's
here?
The fucking romance, dude? Where's the kind of call of the road? You know, letting your hair run. Well, you know what I mean.
We're 3 days in.
Oh. Born to be wise.
The stories are going to get better.
They're already pretty good. I like the lifting and moving business that you've gotten into.
He's a short old trucker. And I'm proud to be an American. Did you you saw the photograph the separated birth we put up on the webpage, by the way, is that right?
You and Willie, I didn't see you put it up on the webpage.
You and Willie Willie? Oh yeah,
I thought you sent that to me. Yes.
No, I put it on the. Oh fuck no, it's no fun if it embarrasses you. I put it on the webpage.
Okay, good.
Now you said that people have told
me go draw on my face with a magnet, rearrange my facial hair.
You know I do that in love and also humiliation, but mostly love and humiliation. You said
if
people
it's
have
told funny. I'm up for anything.
All right, well you're a good sport about that kind of shit. So next week. Where are we going to, where are we talking to you next week, do you think?
Next week, I think I will probably be in the Washington area, possibly Seattle.
Washington, Washington State.
State, yes. There's two of them.
we was something in Washington. Wait a second, what the fuck was in Washington? Oh, the cherry pie, but you got to be there on the 4th of July. That ain't no good.
Well, maybe I'll just stay till then.
What are you planning on doing in Washington?
I have a friend in Seattle who is going to be out of town, and just driving around, you know, seeing the state. Maybe go into Canada.
Over. Usually, people's voices drop at the end of a declarative sentence. So, but I could be wrong.
I have different kinds of inflection. I'm my own person.
What's the scariest thing that's happened to you so far?
Probably almost being raped by the guy at the Chevron station.
Touché, my friend. Nice callback.
Going into Walmart at 8 o'clock at night and buying a buck knife and a baseball bat and not being asked why.
Well, I'm going to ask you why.
That was pretty good. For protection for me. But,
oh, okay.
You know, I was thinking as I walked in there, who just buys those kinds of things, and there's no question, there's no interest from the woman, hey, you're going to go kill somebody and play baseball?
I'm going to go play some stick ball and then knife a guy. I'm going to shiv a guy.
All right. Well, listen, my friend, safe travels.
Thank you.
We will talk to you next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Any words of wisdom from the road?
Don't go to Indian casinos because they're just stealing your money.
A little turnabout seems fair play, don't you think?
A little bit, but at least serve alcohol. I can't get drunk while I'm losing my money. What fun is that?
All right, we love you, my friend. Take care of yourself and enjoy your trip. We'll talk to you next week.
Be safe, buddy.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
All right. I'm still jealous.
I saw this guy on Merv. I did.
All right. Here we go. We'll take another break. Back on the side. Schnauzer Logic.
I think you're a refreshing gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
Walk through town, feel the ground pounding up your legs. Useless life, chase the night far away. All your little friends are shrinking like motorbikes. Everything you know is a living goodbye. There's so much life coming along your way. You throw it all away. You throw it. Just pass out. Oh.
your orientation. Is there anything you do not understand? Is there anything you understand only partially? If you have not been fully oriented, you must file a complaint with personnel. File a faulty complaint, and they dock you.
Welcome back. 16 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic the Podcast. Robin Goldstein. Hey, I've got my radio voice. We're great being here with you this Wednesday afternoon. How you guys doing? We love you. Don't ever change. CBS FM, my friends. All the oldies all the time. I'm so glad there's no mirror in front of me because I would freak myself out. Robin Goldstein here, straight my blues vegetarian. Gotta love you. Sean Meehan is here. Love him too. Parviz Patali. I gotta keep my eyes closed. If I see what they're looking at me right now, it just gets just too fucking weird. All right, babies.
That was good.
That was disturbing, wasn't it?
Slightly.
Why isn't he hosting the show? Hey, bring that level of easy professionalism
to the
program.
Oh, man. I love Jason, but you were saying during the break that it's not getting off on the right foot.
No, it's not. It's just this terrible tale of a little Jewish guy who, in between errands, is fighting for his life in parking lots, you know, with a Bowie knife and a baseball bat, trying to protect his laptop and his old van.
Already.
Yeah, this isn't.
The first 3 days, he's buying a weapon and gambling. He hasn't done anything like that.
Well, that's a story of America. It's Lewis and Clark and Nathanson.
The poor guy, I want him to break the chains, you know, throw off the yoke. I want him freewheeling. I want him out there like Peter Fonda, you know, just...
Yes, or Quan Chang Kane.
I want him, little Quan Chang out there.
Something.
Just,
speaking of which, I'm going to completely just fucking go. Coming up, I think next week, we're going to be talking to Robin Goldstein. There is another Robin Goldstein.
Oh, cool.
And Robin Goldstein and I wound up exchanging emails at the very beginning of the modern internet over 10 years ago when there were basically only two Robin Goldsteins in the entire world as far as the internet was concerned. And this last week, I got an email from a travel agent in Hong Kong, I think it was, saying, yes, we can give you accommodations. You know, we understand you're a travel writer, blah, 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 blah. I looked at the email and I realized that it was not Robin Goldstein at another domain that I have an address at, but Robin S. Goldstein. So I forwarded it, not thinking it was the same person that I knew from years ago, to this person. I said, I think I got your mail. I'm sorry that I got there first and you had to use your middle initial. And this person wrote back and said, are you the same Robin Goldstein that wrote to me 10 years ago when I was... And I thought, holy fuck, are you the Harvard student? This was a Harvard student. It's like, yeah, that's me. And after I finished Harvard, I actually wound up going to law school. And then I became a film reviewer. And now I'm a travel writer. And I write for Fodor's, blah, blah, blah. And so anyhow, Robin Goldstein is a travel writer and is in Hong Kong, I think, or in China. And so we're going to talk to Robin Goldstein on the show next week. He said he'd be willing to kind of do this little doppelganger thing. So I thought, well, it'd be really fun to have all of our doppelgangers on the show with us here.
Parviz Patali, good luck with
that. That's harder. So I didn't start with that. So I'll be honest with you. Mama Goldstein didn't raise no dummy. Freak yes, dummy no.
Go to Iran. You'll find him all over the place.
I didn't start with Parviz. I started with Sean Meehan, looking for other Sean Meehans that we could find. And in the process, I went to IMDb. You are in IMDb.
I've never updated. Most of the work
You are on Law and Order?
No.
It says you were on Law & Order. You had a walk-on. You were like third guy from the left or something like that?
No.
That's not you?
But
Kuhn is there. Tell.
Oh, good gosh.
I know you're so proud.
This was something I did.
And now we need to have a link to Kuhn. Perfect.
This is something I did. I was kind of sick at the time, physically. I was sort of infirmed, and I needed a way to pass my days easily. And I ran into some guys. Now, you have to remember, this is probably taking place in maybe 1999, and there were a lot of internet millionaires. There were a lot of young go-getters here in the Santa Clara Valley who had made extraordinary amounts of money in web-related businesses and services and what have you. And some guys from Yahoo, I mean, some of the original Yahoo guys and what have you, they got together and they wanted to make a kind of underground, wacky, kung fu, comedy, Robert Rodriguez kind of production thing. And it actually wound up costing an enormous amount of money to put together just a few episodes of this awful show that looks like it was done with pocket DV cameras. But they cost hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars per episode. And we made this show that involved kung fu and kind of, you know, some silly potty humor and a strange...
How could it fail?
Let me tell you. At least on the West Coast, there is a large electronics box store retailer called Fry's.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go into any Fry's, at least in this area, you will find about 2 feet of Kwoon on their DVD aisle.
I have a copy.
Yeah, and, you know, just by virtue of the kind of inflation that's out there, it's worth less than the DVD it was
you
burned
can melt
on.
The raw materials down and make a buck.
But it was just a bizarre event. But most of the work that I did in the entertainment industry occurred pre-online. So, and it was mostly for companies that made small films. So people haven't bothered to go back and I think probably incorporate a lot of that in the IMDb because a lot of the Internet Movie Database is, of course, what we're talking about. That is sort of driven by the individuals who do the work.
Sure.
You know, you have to sort of ride shotgun on the people who are doing this and sort of ride herd on them to make sure that all your credits are updated constantly on the IMDb or they'll just languish.
Right. Well, I've got it pulled up here on the screen. It says, actor filmography 1, Kwoon. You were Death Puppet Bob?
Yes, I was. I was. There was a...
You're so fucking modest, dude.
There was a rather elaborate rig, a rather elaborate puppetry rig, and it required a lot of operation. And I was the voice, and a lot of it was improv'd. And you'd never know, because, oh... Every bit is gold.
Is that right?
Oh yeah.
There was no cutting room floor. The cutting room was suspended in midair, so there was no floor.
There, no. Oh man.
It also had 2, Law and Order: Criminal Intent, aka Law and Order CI. A Person of Interest was the episode, and you were Bowden.
Apparently not a person of interest.
That's not you.
I was not the person of interest.
Okay, so that is not you.
Person of interest.
You're Sean Meehan 1, and you're listed as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's another Sean Meehan. Miscellaneous Crew, you were a camera operator on Garage Days?
No.
Not you either?
No.
Okay. So...
if it's not art department, it's not me.
There's
basically.
Also a Sean Fian. A Shane Meehan.
And they're probably all more successful than I am. This is just hurting me.
A Sean Sheehan. Sean Keegan. A Sean P. Keehan. I think it stands for Puffy. So, but there are some Sean Meehans as a professor of something or other ology.
I am as well, and that's just a coincidence that the something or other ology conventions we don't see.
So
each
should
other.
We try to get a doppelganger for you?
Absolutely, find an appropriate one.
I'd like to find this guy who was the
who's guy like number Gordon. 3. Yeah,
and you're saying that we're going to have to go to Iran or Iran?
I think so. The number
is
1
is Salinas or Selena or Selina.
The 1 name in
you
Iran.
You say Vagina, and I say.
The 1 name in Iran is
Parviz Fatali?
Mohammed. 2,
Parviz
most
Fatali?
Popular name is Parviz.
And is that like is like Peter? Is
it's like it's like John or Sean or Robin.
Is it like Paul?
What or Mary.
Why couldn't it be like a P name? No, but it's Parviz. We're trying to help our listeners.
I understand.
It's
like Ringo.
I will bet you that one of our listeners knows someone.
I will take that bet, my friend.
Yeah, I will too.
Because when I used to work at Safeway, I got maybe 2 people in the whole time I was there. They said the way you pronounce my name, if you pronounce it correctly, I immediately think, okay, you must know someone named Parviz. And then one lady said, oh, hi Parviz, how are you? Because I have a name tag. And I said, oh, you said it so well. You know, you pronounced it well. She goes, oh, I work with a Parviz. I said, oh, okay.
Okay.
You know, it's.
I have nothing more to say.
I think that that has always bothered me. People's pronunciation of names has always disturbed me. As a child, my name is Sean Meehan. The Sean is like the Sean Connery or Sean Bean, or, you know, it's S-E-A-N.
Growing up, they said Sean.
Sean. And they struggled with Meehan, too. So I sounded like a little Asian kid. Oh, is there a Sean Meehan? Seeing me hand. Oh, yes, here I am. No, it's terrible.
When I was growing up in school, and there was a substitute teacher, you can imagine when they came to my name, they'd go down the roll call. It's like Bobby, you know, and Mary and Robin and Sean. That's me right there, Parviz. They're like, thank you. And then they continue, Taylor, and whatever. They just pause. And I'm thinking, you're an English teacher. You don't know how to pronounce these names.
Well, that's because they're an English teacher. They aren't a Farsi teacher.
Exactly.
I'm using your letters, though.
Well, so do the Japanese, and they don't get it right.
It's funny, when you go into Safeway, though, we have Safeways out here, a big chain grocery store, and one of their policies is to thank you using your name, and you usually use some sort of a discount card so they know who you are. And my wife, whose last name is Jeffers, always signs us up for these things. So I put in our code number, and I come up, Mr. Jeffers. Jeffers. J-E-F-F-E-R-S. Mr. Jofanese. No. It's
and you know
J,
what's sad?
J,
you know what's sad?
J.
Sound it out.
Jerfins. No, it's P. P. P as in raisin. You know, it's crazy. These people they're not good with their pronunciation.
And that's why you're not working at the Safeway anymore.
That's correct. That's correct. And when you fill out those applications for Safeway, you don't ever The biggest misconception is that people put their real name. And we have other people with a sense of humor. They'll put Mickey Mouse, Mr. President. So when it comes up on the receipt.
But what about people with a sense of humor? What do they put?
I don't know.
You set the expectations so high. I'm waiting for the joke.
There it is. Mickey Mouse, Mr. President. So when the receipt comes up, they go, thank you very much, Mr. Mouse.
But McCracken. I need a job. Amanda, kiss and hug. Jesus. But you don't play those games on the job now.
No.
No, baby.
No.
You'll blow an orbital.
Last week, I almost blew a $10,000.
Yeah. Were you here last week?
Yes, I was. This week.
You know, you told
this
that
week,
story last week.
This week, somebody is losing their job because of me.
Is that right?
I tell you.
This
job is no longer a plumbing update. This has become therapy. I'm like ruining everybody's lives. I can't.
Do you alert them that you know nothing, though? Do you make sure they understand that when you go to each new job site?
Wow.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I just got the news a few hours before I got here that this man is going to be fired because of me tomorrow.
All right. I don't want to give it away.
All right.
Oh, I don't want to give it away. We got more stuff we're going to do.
That was me before I met Parviz Vitali.
All right. Here's what I want to do. I'll take another quick break at this point. And
now nobody wants to work with me.
I want to talk about Stephen Colbert when we get back, right? Do a little bit of a Stephen Colbert update and maybe a little reality show kind of update. Is that good for you guys? Yeah. Oh, and we also need to play, maybe we'll play, we'll do some Brian Cox when we get back.
That sounds great.
That's what we'll do. We'll do Brian Cox when we get back. We'll do a little Colbert reality. Yeah, we're figuring it out here. All right. So I need to find the Meehan? Is that what you're saying? I guess I can find the Meehan. You don't know any Meehans.
They're all drunk. You ain't tell you something about Sean. It's true. All my family's full of alcoholics.
Well, I'll see.
I love them dearly. Hi, Mom. Yeah.
All right. And you don't think we're going to have any luck in finding well, Sean Meehan's I know I can find. Even if listen, I'm willing to go overseas. I got this deal now where we can call like for 3 cents. Like when I call Robin Goldstein in Hong Kong, I get some deal. It's like 4 cents a minute. Some kind of scamological thing. Scam-a-rinky-dinky-dink, scam-a-rinky-do. I love you.
Can I do my Hong Kong theme music?
All right, thank you.
But you can do your Japanese theme music. How about your Thailand theme music? You don't even change the pitch. It should be a little bit higher because it's closer. The Doppler, the Doppler effect. It should be like, right?
You gotta crunch up those wavelengths, man.
You know why that is, of course.
Can I give you the Iranian theme music? All right, break.
Oh, God.
Break is over.
It's good to have a profession, though.
Oh, you are a disturbing motherfucker.
That's the problem with Jason, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he should have got a gun. I don't know why he's got a knife and a bat.
Why?
As soon as that thing loses it, he loses it. The other guy's now got the bat.
Well, I suggested that he get a gun. I asked him whether he was going to go packing any heat when he was on the road because he was not going to be staying in, you know, five-star motels, whatever. He's going to be staying in campgrounds and behind gas stations. And he said, do you think I should? And I said, well, you know, something to protect yourself. I mean, you're kind of exposed. And he said, yeah, but if I have a gun, I might use it to kill myself. And so I said, all right, what about a crossbow? I'm pretty sure there are not a lot of instances, right?
Crossbow suicide.
Now he's a little guy. He got short arms. So I think they have to, you know, cock it. Ooh, cock it. You know what I mean?
I heard you.
That's yeah. all I'm saying. Yeah, a baseball bat?
He should not have a weapon on him.
Very hard to bludgeon yourself to death with a baseball bat.
But even what if he just got a taser? You know, that's like just a heavy duty.
Like Star Trek?
No, oh, not, no a, that... not a phaser. No, you can use those to warm rocks and things. I've seen no, one of those little electronic no. stun guns. Because then you no. can also use it just for fun around no. the van. You know, if the trip gets too hard, just zap yourself. It's over.
You wake up tomorrow bright and shiny.
I say he should get a baby's car seat and plant it on top of the van and drive across country with the baby's car seat. Just to freak everybody out of the road.
And that's why you're not a travel agent. All right, we're taking a break. We're going to play a little country western music. Come back on the other side. Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, Sean Meehan, Schnauzer Logic. We're having fun. Please stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
I remember on the night we met, I was drunk enough to dance. And the way your roommates hated me, I never thought I stood a chance. But you said you'd buy me breakfast, and it was then I should have known that you could make a cowboy's dreams come true, but I'd be waking up alone. Fiona, I knew you'd break my heart. Yeah, I could see the ending right there at the start. Well, against us, and never again were we alone. But I think about you now and then, wherever I may roam. And I remember feeling 10 feet tall, feeling oh so young. And you whispering something dirty to me in your native tongue. Fiona, I knew you'd break my heart. Yeah, I could see the end. There at the start, we'll be a owner after all.
is crying to you, I can hear him say, Fiona, I knew you'd break my heart. Yeah, I could see the ending right there at the start.
Oh, yeah.
They're funny.
Keeps me entertained.
Funny, funny comedy.
Those tree-hugging sissies.
And now your host, Brian Cox.
Welcome to another episode of Road Stories from the Real Highway Comics. I'm Brian Cox, and I'm a stand-up comic. We're going to start off with the story right off the top here, and then get into a little information about comedy and speaking and that type of thing right after the story. So, after one show in a small town, two comics exit the bar where they had just done a show behind chicken wire. So you know how that went. Anyway, they looked down into the snow and they saw a guy passed out. One comic said, "Hey, we gotta move this guy or he's gonna freeze. The bar's locked up tight. What the hell are we gonna do?" And the other comic says, "Hey, I got a plan. Let's look for some ID. We'll throw him in the back seat and give him a ride home." Well, the two found his ID. You see, this guy couldn't walk a step. His speech was slurred, and he was totally, totally wasted. Finally, after dragging the poor guy about a block, the two reached the car, pulled him into the back seat. They got the address from the wallet, and away they went to do the good deed. Just as they pulled up in front of the house, loud gagging was heard from the back seat. Blah, blah, you know, you've been there. Anyway, one comic went running up to the front door, rang the bell. The other was trying to unload the rather, by now, messy passenger. The two dragged their good deed to the door, right up to the guy's wife, and said, "Well, we think he lives here." The woman was so grateful. She said, "Oh, you brought my husband home. Thank you, thank you, thank you. How can I ever repay you?" The comics go, "Oh, don't worry about it. It's okay." The two heroes walked away, feeling pretty good with themselves. And then they heard the woman yelling from the house, "Hey, you guys happen to see his wheelchair?" Now, you see, a lot of people think that that's the kind of thing that's a joke. Well, it isn't. You see, the two comics actually didn't want their name mentioned, and it actually happened to them. And now, as you can tell, that's the kind of thing that can be easily made into material. You see, I've even actually had that story told to me at the end of shows, yeah, by the same guys who go, "Hey, I got a joke for you. You can use it in your act." Anyway, those two comics have told that story so many times it's now in the public domain and it's coming around to bite them on the butt. But just one good example of how comedy material is formulated, all based on some kind of loose truth. Now, let's take a look at the material side of things. If you're a comic and you're listening to this, you might find it a little boring because you know exactly what I'm talking about. All comedy is based on some form of pain to something or someone. When you look back at the first caveman, Og would pick up a bone and hit Mog over the head with it. Mog would be hurting big time. The rest of the clan would be sitting there laughing, showing joy. Mog notices this and says, well, he's hurting, and he realizes indirectly that he's brought pleasure to the clan. So he picks up a bone, hits himself over the head with it. Everyone laughs. There you go, folks. The first slapstick comic is born. Enter the Three Stooges. You see, people like to laugh at misfortune. Yours, theirs, and someone else's. When someone comes up to me at the end of a show, they say things like, "Man, you talked about the stuff that really has happened to me." Well, there you go. Misfortune. Theirs, mine, and we both shared a moment. And I think that moment is called life. I'm Brian Cox, and this is Road Stories from the Real Highway Comics.
Here we go.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Hello? Mommy, can you hear me? Oh, yeah, there we go. 142. No, 42 minutes. Sorry. Welcome back. 42 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic Podcast. Robin Goldstein. Straight white boys, vegetarian, lesbian, attorney, right, trapped in the body, recovering, transsexual, and patent, attorney, thus, to your match, screen, city planning. www.schnauzerlogic.com. Robin at schnauzerlogic.com. Or you can get the show over at iTunes. Just type in Schnauzer or Logic or Schnauzer Logic or Robin Goldstein. And we're happy to get your reviews. I think we've got some more reviews coming, which is terrific. And sitting here in the studio with me, Parviz Vitali.
Son of Easter.
The one and the only, because we looked on IMDb, we can't find anyone.
I'm the one and only.
We found Parviz Jafari. Wasn't he in Aladdin?
He was. He was.
And Sean Meehan. Wasn't he in Quoon?
No. No. There's a case where Brian Cox is wrong. You others' misfortunes can't always be laughed at. Speaking of misfortune.
Yes, yes, please.
Stephen Colbert speaking at the very prestigious White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah.
Last week, was that last Saturday or Friday?
Last Saturday night.
Last Saturday night. The president is always in attendance every year. Major political heavy hitters and celebrities from around the country, and of course the White House press corps. And so a whole lot of press people, a whole lot of politicos. And Stephen Colbert, who, as most of you probably know, has a regular program on Comedy Central. He does the Colbert Report right after right after Jon Stewart's Daily Show. And I believe a protege of Jon Stewart. Does Jon Stewart actually produce the
he
Report?
Is. He's actually the executive producer. That's right. Right. Yeah.
So kind of the brainchild of Jon Stewart. And wow. What happened? He was sort of the keynote comedian, and he spoke truthiness to power.
He did indeed.
Very interesting. He did a very acerbic, caustic, some would say just out-and-out insulting routine that just eviscerated the press corps and the administration.
Right.
And he got very few laughs. The response reflected the unhappiness.
Well, now, you know, what's interesting is I when Parviz came in before the show, we were doing a little show prep, just kind of hanging out and talking, and I said to him, did you hear about the president? And he said, oh, yeah, the guy who's on Jay Leno, he heard about the George W.
Impersonator,
right?
Right.
And, you know, and I said that, and that was very funny. That got a lot of big laughs. Right, and that's on a little videotape. And I said, "Did you hear about Stephen Colbert?" And you said to me,
"No,
there was no press about it."
Right,
right. It was completely silent, and it's absolutely important to watch. And yet, the fact that I can understand why Republicans were not happy, but why the press just kind of rolled over. I'm sure you've seen it at this point.
Oh, many times.
You watched it more than once.
Yes,
he was brutal. And he adopted his Bill O'Reilly character.
Yes.
The Colbert Report is a character. It's a character that he plays. The interesting thing was the very next night, you know, he was on 60 Minutes being profiled by Ed Bradley, I think. Morley Safer. Being profiled by Morley Safer. And showing that's not who he is. You know, this is a character that allows him to basically out O'Reilly O'Reilly. And that irony is dead. You have to have enough intelligence and enough critical thinking skills to be able to get underneath the humor to appreciate the irony. And that seems to be all but missing from the discourse that we face today.
That may well be the case, but I do feel like, and hats off to Colbert for many reasons. I thought his remarks were insightful. I thought they were full of irony. I thought that they were ballsy as hell. I also thought that they weren't that funny. Many of them were not funny. There was not a laugh there. There's one point where he talks about the generals. We are, of course, right now, there's a great debate going on among the military, both the current military and retired military, about the merit of our war plan in Iraq and how many former generals are coming forward decrying that this was not the way to go to war, this is not the way to currently be at war, there are serious problems with the American war effort, and people still within the official military establishment trying to buttress their position. There's a lot of heat back and forth there. Colbert came out and he made some jokes about the former generals coming out, how you could stop their mouthing off by not letting them leave the military using the stop loss laws that we have to keep personnel in the military against their will. And then he made a remark at the end of the joke, which I thought was really startling. He said, and this is a very close paraphrase, "I see these retired generals on Wolf Blitzer. They look pretty good to me. You can't tell me that if you have enough energy and spunk to be on with Blitzer, that you can't still be in the military. What does it take to stand on a bank of computers and order real men into war?" That was one of his jokes.
Right.
That is not a joke.
No.
It is not a joke. It is an insult. It is a clever insult.
Right.
But there is no pum pum. It violates joke structure.
The joke is that the joke is the premise.
Right.
The joke is that he is a right wing commentator.
Right.
And that they really believe this, and he's taking that to the breaking point.
Right.
That's the joke.
And unless you step back to get that meta perspective, you don't see the humor at all. And maybe that's what you're saying when you talk about irony being dead. Maybe we are unable, we are so engaged in the moment that we are unable to take that intellectual step back, get the meta perspective. Okay, this is a guy pretending to be a guy, pretending to hold a position that is patently absurd, and in that, taken in toto, is the joke. But clearly, it wasn't a joke. For many of these people, they couldn't get that far away. And I'm not sure, quite frankly, if I were these people, that I would be able to get that far away.
Maybe not. It may hit too close to home.
Yeah.
What was your take on this? I mean, had you heard about the correspondence dinner before this happened?
Yeah. But what I found interesting when I heard the Colbert bit, that guy is a true professional. Even though he's bombing, he kept trekking along.
Yeah.
As if he's getting huge laughs.
Because
he's like, screw them. I'm going. I've got the mic. I'm going. And
I think, when people say he was bombing, he was bombing in the limited sense of how many laughs he was getting in that room at that moment.
Right.
These people are not his audience.
Right.
He
exactly.
walked in knowing he was going to bomb. And it is a incredible statement of his professionalism that when the room clearly responded badly to his early material, he didn't let up. He just went at it harder.
Right.
He didn't decide, okay, now with all this pressure from the audience,
right,
I'm going to begin to draw back the barbs in this.
No.
He redoubled his effort to insult.
On Monday night, Jon Stewart on his show sort of commented on it in the very beginning of the Daily Show, and he said that Stephen Colbert was balls-alicious, They bleeped that, but it was clear what he was saying. It was major, major huevos to do that, and I have to think, because now they're saying, well, he'll never be invited back, blah 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 blah. They knew what they were doing. There is certainly an element of the press that is frustrated, and this was an opportunity for them to have somebody else throw a Molotov cocktail into the mix here and shake up the status quo and upset all of the chairs. And good for them. I'm sure they felt that way. It's like, well, if Colbert's willing to be the bomb thrower, we're willing to give him the stage to throw the bomb.
So you think that he was an agent provocateur
with the
complicit approval
yes.
of a great...
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
It's not like this guy is known for doing, Gallagher kind of yeah. humor. You
he
know,
doesn't
smashing
make balloon animals.
No, he's not. He's not the Howie Mandel, president or no president. You know, he's not, that's not what he's doing. He's that's the character that he plays. And even when he was on The Daily Show, he always played, you know, the cocksure idiot. That's always been at the core of what he's done. And Strangers with Candy, I mean, all of his characters, that's the characterization that he does very well. You know, he knows what he's talking about, even when he has no idea what he's talking about. He's got the confidence of 1,000 brilliant men. And I think I'm so disappointed, I'm so angry with the administration, that I was glad to see the bomb throwing. It's hard for me to step back and sort of be honest about the whole process and sort of say, yeah, you know, this felt like it was over the top or inappropriate or what have you. No, so
it felt like one of our guys finally made it into the end zone.
It did. It did. So
spike the ball.
There you go.
And well, with the approval rating so low for the president, I'm sure that room being so Republican, he didn't probably care. He knew the whole world agreed with
him. Well, he was pissed. The president does not show his... He's not able to hide... I'd love to play poker with him. Because he's a shitty poker player. He's, you know, his tell is, you know, the steam coming out of the top of his head. That's his tell. You know, he doesn't have the gracious ability to kind of laugh it off as like, yeah, I understand this is all humor, but I'm really in charge. True leaders don't give a fuck what a comedian says about them. Right. It's only those who are really worried about what people are saying about them. And that, I think, is ultimately what his problem is. He cares too much about what people, whether he's getting...
He pays no attention to polls.
Well, fortunately, Colbert is not Polish, so there you go. All right. I know, we should, but instead we need to do this. It's that time.
When the ice comes and the snow, and it's 48 below, and then the temperature begins to fall, and they hear the moan and whine of the frozen water line, then the plumber is the man who saves them all. Oh. The plumber is the man. The plumber is
Sing along.
The man.
Go ahead. Shoot up again.
Down into the cellar he must crawl. He must crawl.
Therapy.
He is not sleek or slim, and they all look down on him. But the plumber is the man who saves them all.
The weekly therapy session.
That's what you said when you came in today. I think it's great.
This is bad. So far, it's 2 bad weeks in a row.
It's a month that you've been on the job.
I know, a month so far, and already I've got two bad stories.
All your fingers, all your toes.
Actually, I burned my finger today. So
let's see.
But I, yeah.
It's a
boo-boo. The worst I ever had at the supermarket, I might have spilled milk on my shoes. So here it is.
Let's have it, my right. friend.
I had to work in a prefab area. We're gonna make heating and air conditioning units, and we have to prefab and put them together. So when we ship them out, all they have to do is just connect to the ceiling and blah blah blah. So working on prefab, we're soldering, and I'm working with this guy who's been plumbing for 25, 30 years, and I don't know him that well. But apparently he has a reputation of being, maybe lazy is the word, or just kind of cuts corners and blah, blah, blah. So I'm working, I'm soldering, I'm prefabbing, and he's at a distance. He's maybe, I don't know, 10 feet away from me, and I'm telling him from afar. I said, hey, is this right? He goes, yeah, that's right. I said, okay. And every time I do something, and what he's supposed to do is to teach me and to show me. So this was yesterday. So today the boss comes in. And that guy, his name is Tom, who's helping me all day yesterday, doesn't show up to work. And so my boss says, how did it go? I said, oh, it went pretty good. And they looked at our job, and they were furious. We did it totally wrong, and we did everything upside down. So we had to take everything apart and put it back correctly. And in the process, my boss realized that a lot of things were done extremely poorly, to the point where it could have cost the company a lawsuit, because we're dealing with biotech labs and whatever, and they trust that nothing's going to leak and nothing's going to contaminate any of their rooms. And so he looks at me and he says, did you do this? And I said, you know what? I probably did. I mean, Tom and I both worked on all of these. I don't remember. And they all look the same. We have like 10 heating, air conditioning ducts. They all look the exact same. They're just like put together kits. So I said, you know, did I do that one? Probably. If it's not done well, I probably did it. He said he was furious, and it turns out he's furious at Tom because Tom wasn't looking over my shoulder to make sure I was doing this correctly. So he tells me today, that's it. I'm getting rid of Tom. And Tom's been at this company 7 years, But Tom's been a plumber for 25, 30 years.
Wow.
And so tomorrow, I just feel terrible. I've got butterflies because tomorrow, Tom's going to probably walk into work, have no idea what happened today. All day today, my boss was pissed. All day today, I'm trying to unscrew what we screwed up yesterday. And I told him as the day went on, I said, you know, I really feel bad. I don't think you should get rid of Tom. It was like, no. He said, if you did it or if Tom did it, doesn't matter. If you did it, Tom should have known. Tom should have been watching you. And if he did it, that's he did a poor job. And I said, well, do you think you should be getting rid of him or just kind of talking? He goes, well, this isn't the first time. We've had many problems with him. I'm getting rid of him. I said, oh.
So it really isn't you. You are the proverbial straw.
I'm convincing myself, or everybody's convincing me, it's not you. Well, it is. It could have been me. It could have been me that screwed up this one particular air conditioning heater thing that he looked at and he was furious about. Could have been me. Chances are it was me. But his point is, where was Tom? And Tom's a big guy. Tom's a very large man. He's, you know, he's not in the best of health. And so for him...
Married?
No, he's going through a divorce.
Ooh.
And
that's
so
perfect.
Yeah. So he's 10 feet away at this end of the table working on stuff. And so it's generally kind of difficult for him to get up and down to check on my work. So I think from a distance, he'll look at it, oh, yeah, that's good enough. Where my boss is like, no, we have to be exact, blah, 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 which I understand. So tomorrow morning, Tom's going to walk in. They're going to have a talk with him. And so I just don't want to see him. I'm just afraid he's going to look at me, you punk. You sold me out.
Have you thought about tomorrow morning might be a good day for dental surgery? Or
yeah, taking the day off tomorrow. Yeah, calling in sick.
Oh.
You know, women's time of the month for you, something
that's
like that.
True. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
So last week, I almost ruined a very expensive machine. This week, I ruined a man's life. Next week...
Listen, as next week, he destroys a marriage and
it could all change
perverts
next week.
Children.
It could all change. I kind of pleaded to my boss today that maybe we shouldn't be firing him. I said, that's a little harsh. Why don't we? He goes, no. I'm tired of this. I'm like, oh.
Are you having second thoughts?
No. I'm moving on. Second thoughts about this is the wrong occupation?
Yeah.
there are more lives to destroy.
My second thoughts about Tom. What are you talking about?
Well, no, I don't mean about Tom. You have second thoughts about... No?
No, I'm not having second thoughts. As a matter of fact, my boss is asking me today if how's it going? It's been a month. How do I feel? I said, I feel pretty good. I said, well, you know, I almost ruined a machine and I fired a man.
But you notice how today he did not say once, you know, I don't know anything. I know nothing. I didn't. You didn't use the Schultz defense today at all.
And I don't think I talked about potty humor today at all.
Actually, you were kind of subdued today. I just want to make sure that you're feeling much love.
No.
You're feeling much love.
I 2 hours before I got here, I'm thinking about Tom, and I'm like, oh, I just hate that.
Oh yeah, okay.
I just hate that idea that I got to go into work tomorrow, and it's not going to be a terribly happy place tomorrow. And I don't know what to expect. This guy is he's a veteran. He's an old guy. He's been smoking a lot of cigarettes. You know, he's a tough ass and stuff. And I'm just afraid he's going to come up to me. Freaking punk, you know, whatever.
You know,
and
I've never lost a fight in the first quarter mile, Parviz.
And you know what? I could probably outrun him.
That's the key to victory for you, my friend.
You're light on your feet.
Not really, but I'm lighter than him.
Yeah, that's all that counts. In the world of the blind, the one-eyed man, my friend.
Tom has one eye?
Well, after he blew up that orbital.
I went and found orbitals on the web.
That was very nice.
Was that a good orbital?
That was good. I clicked onto the link and I started laughing that, wow, everything has got a link.
Well, not everything. That's almost a little OCD. So what's coming up this week for you in the world of plumbing?
Well, I'm going to continue on. Well, I really don't know. Honestly, every day that I walk into my job, I don't know what I'm going to do. And not until I walk in do they tell me, all right, you're doing this today, you're doing this. All right. I don't have a...
This system seems flawed, though, doesn't it?
Well, it seems extremely frightening and intimidating.
Yes.
And it seems to not be an ideal mechanism for knowledge to be conveyed.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand in the olden days that, you know, an apprentice would work under the master craftsman and you would basically be side by side with someone, cheek by jowl, if
exactly.
you will, all the time, and you'd learn the printing craft or the plumbing craft or the electrical arts or whatever it is. But here they just kind of throw you in with a different random guy who tells you to do something and then walks away.
Yeah. I agree.
That's frightening shit.
I know.
You think they're, but you like the foreman?
Yeah, he's a nice guy, but so far you're right. I haven't had that one person that's by my side.
Someone to take you under their
smelly armpit,
their plum and wing. Yeah. All right. Well, everybody wants you to do well.
I do too.
You're getting paid for this, right?
I am getting paid for this.
Yeah, cha-ching.
So far, I'm still getting paid, and cha-ching. I've got all my fingers and toes, and so
all right,
I'm doing all right.
Well, you're looking next out week, for number one.
Yeah, next week I'll find. You know, we'll see what happens. Okay. I just hope
and
I don't
he's
get.
He's a plumber. He's looking out for number two as well. You know what I'm saying?
Hey! And you? You got a good week coming up?
God, I hope so.
Back to the hospital?
But I don't know. We got kind of mixed messages today. But the ultimate, here's when you know your doctor is flummoxed. You know, let's just do some more tests. Just do your regular thing and come back to me in a month when I've thought of something.
God. All right. Well, I got all kinds of things coming up this week, but we're out of time. I can't tell you about them. So there you go. But hopefully, good Lord's willing, creek don't rise, there ain't no meltdown. We'll be back next week. Until then, I love you, Mom. I miss you, Dad. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. www.schnauzerlogic.com. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. We'll see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.